Anyway, so what we're gonna do this as a so you get a 2-for-1 bonus with Ned's great wisdom and what he's been doing. What I'm gonna do is just set the stage for you by going a bit back in history and sort of talk about collaborative innovation. There's Mako. Hi, Mako. Although we think about collaborative innovation as something that is more modern with open source and Wikipedia, in fact, many historical studies show that most major innovations, or you can sit here, most major innovations look to be, when you go back and sort of study the sources of innovation, that are looked to be highly collaborative as well. So let me just show you some analysis that that was done by Meyer. He's an economist at the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And he sort of looked at airplanes. He's an economic historian. He sort of looked at airplanes and sort of said, you know what, when you actually study airplane development, it's not just the Wright brothers, but a whole bunch of other actors that participated in the creation of airplaning and what it means to fly. So both airplaning and piloting sort of gradually emerged as a field of endeavor by the collaborative efforts of many. And pre-Wright brothers, there's a network of 10 individuals from 6 countries that actively participated, shared papers back and forth, and really tried to figure out what does it mean to actually get flight. And Chanute is so this historian that sort of showed this working and collected all these correspondences and was actually the disseminator of information across the network. He sort of pushed people to run experiments and then to come back and then share the results of the experiments so that people could build on that. And then the Wright brothers, in fact, actually collaborated a lot in this network. They worked with Chanute, they worked with Langley at the Smithsonian. And you know, Chanute and Langley actually came down to Kitty Hawk to sort of see what they were doing and in fact gave them advice on, again, on how to achieve flight. But then, of course, they stopped. And they created some patents, and they basically shut down innovation in aircraft development in the U.S. And then all that actually moved over to Europe and France. So even though the Wright brothers achieved the first flight, the locus of innovation for aircraft actually moved over to Europe and France in particular. So if you think about fuselage, aileron, those are all French terms that came through. Because of this sort of shift. And what we see is that what Meyer showed basically was that contributors were autonomous, they were tinkerers, all the things that we sort of think about open source, we sort of see happening in aircraft development. They like the activity, they like doing the work because they think this is the potential there, right? And that's sort of what drives them, not some kind of a at least upfront economic motivation to sort of invent aircrafting. Many of them have worked together in the past. They shared inventions and discoveries. And of course, everything stopped when the Wright brothers came through and sort of asserted the IP regime. So what we'll talk about next is what Ned has done to sort of look at collaborative innovation in a software setting, but to really show the dynamics of how this works and how people really build on top of each other's work. We sort of see that again in software, but Ned runs a control experiment to really be able to track this development and think through what the implications are for us. And then Ned will sort of talk about what he's done with the MathWorks contest. And then after Ned sort of gives you an overview and walks you through some fun examples, I'll come back and sort of show you some analysis that we've done to sort of show how does this work and what happens between this tension between novelty, new knowledge being created, and also reuse as well of the knowledge. So,
the contest that I'm going to tell you about is something that we run every 6 months at the MathWorks. MathWorks is the name of the company. MATLAB is the product for which we're well known. They sound similar, causes some confusion. But it's a MATLAB programming contest We run it every 6 months. It runs for about a week. And the individual entries in the contest are about a page of code, just to give you an idea of the scale that we're talking about here.
Can I just say one? If you have any questions along the way, just interrupt us. So we want to make it interactive and dynamic and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So do interrupt us.
Obviously,
I interrupted you.
Yeah. There's a lot of programming contests out there, and usually the idea is, you know, who's got the big brain? Who's the really smart person here? We're going to give you one problem, you're going to work in isolation, we're going to give grades, and the smartest person gets to stand up and take a bow. But that's really not how ideas move in the real world. And so we had this idea of making a programming contest where we said, what would happen if we made a contest where we encourage the free flow of ideas between individuals? We made it possible to steal ideas and move them as quickly as possible. And that's the notion, that's what motivated us to make this contest. This is one way to think about it. We're all familiar with Wikipedia. What would happen if Wikipedia had a super intelligent editor feature, and everybody's encouraged to come make their own edit to a Wikipedia article, and then immediately the super intelligent editor would be invoked and it would just know instantly if your edit was an improvement or if it made the article worse. If it made the article worse, it wouldn't be accepted, it would go away. If it made the article better, it would be kept, right? And so imagine, furthermore, if when it accepted your edit, it put your picture up on the side and it said, hey, congratulations to our current leader, Mr. Username, or whoever. What would happen? Would that make Wikipedia better or worse? But those are interesting questions, but that is the basic premise for our contest. So now...
Your premise is that it would make it worse.
No, my premise is not that it would make it worse.
Okay.
But I don't know. So moving away from the Wikipedia specific thing, what we do have is code where we have this objective test function. We don't have to worry about super intelligent editors. I can just say the code with respect to this test function got better or worse, and then we can let the changes accrue. So... here's the one sentence line for it. Week-long open collaborative competition for MATLAB programmers. And these are the salient points. Entries are automatically scored, ranked, and displayed immediately, made available for everyone to see. So code, author, and score are visible at all times, and anyone can modify anyone else's code and resubmit it as their own. In fact, we make it trivially easy for people to do this. This is an encouraged activity. What kind of problems do we solve? Here's an example of a problem. You may have played this game Mastermind, where you try to, somebody places colored pegs and hides them from you, and you make guesses here, and you're gonna get a score back from the person who's hiding the colors from you. And so this is a game, this is sort of an algorithmic game. This is one of the contests that we ran based on Mastermind. Again, just to give you an idea of how this would work. Here's another one, a very, very simplified version of what we call protein folding. Suppose I give you a string of colored beads. It's got red beads and it's got green beads, and you get to lay them out in these sort of flat patterns, and your job is to make all the green beads as close as possible. Just to give you an idea of the kinds of their sort of optimization problems along the lines of traveling salesman kind of a thing. Now, here's the operational aspects of it. What would happen is you would come to this page and you'd say, oh, I want to play this MATLAB programming contest. And you would go to the leaderboard, and let's say I go to the leaderboard and I see there's this guy Kareem in first place. And I say, I know that guy, I could do better than him. So I look at the code that he wrote. So I just click, I see the code that's in first place. And I have two choices at this point. I could either completely make up de novo, you know, my own contribution, or I could just take his and say, I know how to modify that in a very simple way that's going to make it a little bit more efficient. And if I did make the code a little bit more efficient, suddenly my name goes into first place. I'm at the top of the leaderboard. And it's entirely possible that Kareem just spent 3 hours of work, was in the lead for 2 minutes, I came along and added a semicolon and went into first place. That does happen. So what's the social reaction to that? Would you be mad if that happened to you? Maybe, probably. But would it make you so mad that you refuse to play the game anymore? That's the interesting question. Not everybody likes the game. Here's Doug. Doug says,
Who determines first place?
Who determines first place is the question. The answer is it's completely objective. So we have a measurement function. So if you're trying to do a traveling salesman problem, you submit your code. I'm going to take that code, I as the programming contest machinery, take that code, I'm going to run it against a bunch of test suites that you can't see. And you're going to get a score for that. And that's going to be how long your traveling salesman circuit is. So if you write good code, you get an optimization score that's going to get better and better.
Why can't, what's the thinking behind not allowing entrants to see the optimization system? So that we can try out and score ourselves.
People, you can submit as many entries as you want to get graded against the test suite, but the test suite is invisible. If the test suite were made visible, you could just write your answer to the test suite.
You gave it. You gave it.
Yeah. So, okay.
we'll come back to that.
There's hidden information that you're trying to get by writing a very clever algorithm. And so we're trying to just keep people from making brittle code that just gets, you know, what's 2 times 3? You would know the answer is 6 right away. You just code that directly in. Did you have a question?
I did actually. Just to double check, the focus here is on the algorithm and not on how elegant you can code, right? It's definitely on the efficiency
yes,
of the algorithm.
Yes, that's one of the things that happens. That you do get some, you can get some very ugly spaghetti code as a result of this, because all we're doing is saying, did this code run fast and did it get the right answer? When I say right answer, it's not actually a binary, you know, you're absolutely right or you're absolutely wrong. You think of it as an optimization that can get better and better and better depending on how clever your algorithm is. So,
to some degree, the fact that it's collaborative would act against
poorly written code, right?
The fact that it's collaborative would act against
or ugly code.
Poorly written code. And so you're anticipating exactly where this is headed. That's very true, and what's interesting is to see how that emerges from the behavior of the contestants. Some people play in a selfish way, but the people who tend to do best are playing in a generous way. And the code does get a little convoluted, but in general, it's the people are working to keep it from being too obfuscated. So that's actually exactly the tension that we're showing here.
Is the contest winner the one whose name is on top at the tail end, or is it the person whose name has gone on top the most number of times? Or the most differential.
The person who's in the lead is the person who that at that very instant happens to have the best performing code.
Right.
So it has
No memory to it. No, I'm asking at the end of the contest, is there any sort of grading?
At the end of the contest, is there any sort of grading? No. At the end of the contest, we have somebody that we call the grand winner, but they really just happen to be the person who's at the lead at the point at which we turn off the contest.
And the prize is.
And the prize is a T-shirt or a baseball cap. So really, that's an important factor here, too. It's really all about reputation and learning and interaction with the community. Mm-hmm. And despite the fact that people take days off work to play this contest, they're not doing it for money. Yes?
If you base your code on his code, does it show that it's based on his code, and does it show how different it is from the code that you changed?
Yeah, the question is, if one program is based on another one, can you see that? And we do track if you said, I'm going to adopt this code and modify it myself. But it's also possible to obfuscate that. So we can't completely determine that. But then there's some other analysis that we've been doing where we're actually doing a biological style genome analysis to see what the comparisons, essentially looking at the bloodlines and the genomics of the relationship between entries.
On the list of winners, you don't show that.
On the list of winners, we don't show that. And what we see in practice, this is kind of bringing forward some of the conclusions that you'll see later on, but what we see in practice is that people are very anxious to acknowledge the people that they borrowed code from. The people who do the best tend to be generous with their credit, and they say, I'm in the lead now, but, you know, actually I borrowed a lot of code from so-and-so. Just some quotes at the beginning of the talk here. Not everybody likes it. Not everybody gets the basic idea. Doug says, I do not understand why anybody would be interested in participating in a contest where a winning idea is immediately co-opted and tweaked by another player. So Doug is not the kind of person who wants to play. Dwayne also is not the kind of person who likes the contest because he thinks that you end up with ugly-looking code. The code generated in the contest violate all rules for good code writing. As a result, they are a poor reflection on what people should do when they solve a problem in MATLAB. From this point of view, the contests are terrible. So Doug and Dwayne don't play the contest a lot, but not everybody feels that way. This is Stein. I started on Monday after work. I worked late, let's say 4 or 5 hours. I started to become obsessed. At home, although I'm the father of 3 children, my full-time job was working on the contest. I didn't sleep much. I worked maybe 10 hours after work each day. On Thursday, it was clear that I wasn't going to be able to work seriously for my job, so I took off on Friday. Stein, I'm happy to say, won that contest. Nathan says, Nathan's from Ireland, Stein is from Belgium. Nathan says, this is my first MATLAB contest. It's giving me far too much enjoyment. It's one of the most addictive things I have tried. The exercise is improving my programming skill, but in return, I have a backache, a terrible diet, no social life, and not much of a work life either. Also, I have experienced physical trembling while making preparations to send the code into the pit. Is that normal? Not really, but we like it. So that's the kind of emotion that gets stirred up by this. Now I'm going to show you some pictures that illustrate the collaborative nature that we see. This next, first I want to introduce 2 types of changes that people can make. One is, let's say that your job is to generate the nth Fibonacci code. So you need to write code that's going to do that. Take my word for it, this code at the top generates the nth Fibonacci number, and this code does too, and they look completely different. So here's someone in moving from this code to this code has said, I know a much better way to do this. I'm going to completely displace all the code that was in there before. And we call that, you know, a leap or a breakthrough and a big shift. Much more common, we see things that are much smaller changes that we call tweaks, where somebody's just doing a very minor optimization. If you know MATLAB, you might know that these two will result in the same number, but this just happens to be a slightly faster implementation of getting to the same result. And so because it's slightly faster, it gets to the same result, your code will do better. So tweakers don't need to really understand the algorithm to add value to the common good. Okay, that's one of the important things that's going on here. This is the sort of most useful way to visualize the entire contest. What are you looking at here? Every single little blue dot is a different entry in the contest. There are thousands of them. This is time. This is the beginning of the week or the beginning of the contest. It runs from Wednesday to Wednesday, essentially, here. So this is 1 week you're looking at. And then think about the score getting lower is better. So you're seeing the blue dots make a cloud that's essentially descending over that week. These are people making that code perform better and better. The red line is the frontier that is at the lowest point. So those are the leaders over time. So you're seeing, and then we have some of the names called out for the leaders. So you're watching the best code get better and better. The Y scale here is logarithmic. So in log space, you're seeing this the code get much, much better over time. But actually, this is a smaller change, small improvement relative to that. It's harder and harder to squeeze water out.
Towards the end, the same guy seems to be at the lead.
Yes, you see people. These are the people who get obsessed. And we see tweaking battles where people are trading shots with each other. And, oh, you tweaked my code. I'm going to tweak your code. And so it keeps that energy engaged to optimize the performance.
So on average, you get about 3,000 entries per contest and about 110 per contest.
And you see a definite power law in terms of the contribution. I'm sure that doesn't surprise you, but some people are contributing hundreds of times, and a lot of people are contributing 1, 2, and 3 entries.
I'm sorry, back on the black box optimization test, because you have
a lot of dots,
yeah,
and only obviously one that's at each moment that's... What's going on with all those other dots? Are these people who don't know your product, MATLAB, very well? Are they ones who are, or don't know how to, it's like trying to get good Google search results. You just don't know exactly what the optimization is going to be. So there's no good rational way of figuring out how to improve
the
code.
So what's interesting is,
All of the above.
Yeah. This goes to like the pattern of participation. So we know that right here, this is the best code, and this is transparent. Anybody else can take this code, and they could just resubmit that as their own. So all the entries that are sort of above this don't make any sense, right? Because if you're a half-smart guy, you could take that code, and you sort of say, oh, I can just resubmit it, and at least I'll score here. So anything above here, it's a mystery why you would sort of see, you know, anywhere you could sort of draw a line across and say, why are these existing at all?
But wouldn't they exist because if I
I say, hey, I think I have a better way to do that, so I'm going to submit it once, and then I say, yeah. Oh gosh, it's half as good.
Yeah, exactly. I would put it more like that. What you tend to see is I can draw lines, and I have some graphs to show this, but I can draw lines between related entries, and you see a sort of spray coming off of the lead entry. Everybody copies it, and some of them copy it and make it much worse. So you tend to see this spray coming off the frontier going up and to the right. Easy to copy code and make it work.
It's experimentation, basically. People are trying on different things, different ideas, and what Net has is actually you can capture all that experimentation. Right? Some of them are good ideas, and some of them are crappy ideas, and that we can capture all of that.
I'm sorry to stick on this, I'll stop.
No.
But they're crappy ideas only because your software happens to optimize in one way and not another. That's unpredictable. You have to actually submit. All those wrong guesses are not stupid people necessarily. They're people who have guessed wrong about how your system actually works.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. What we're doing is we're sort of walking that tightrope between code that is robust and inarguably better over here versus things that are brittle and maybe ugly code but do slightly better over here. And it's hard to say, you know, one person's robust code is somebody else's brittle solution that happens to be talking to the test suite. So we see everything from people who just don't know how to code very well. A lot of times we see patterns where somebody who has a good idea but doesn't know the idioms of our language, and they can then be assisted, pulled forward by somebody who knows the idioms of our language but would not have come up with that idea. Right? That's the back and forth that we see.
Do you see like a lot of people building off of those kinds of entries, those ones that aren't high scoring leading entries? Because like my concern would be if everybody's following so closely the leading entry, you're going to miss those good ideas that just are poorly implemented or whatever. But do you see
so
people grabbing
them? Yeah, and what I'm going to do is try to zoom through some of the pictures that illustrate this, because I think they do speak to some of these questions. You're asking all the right questions, and you're headed in exactly the right direction. And you had one question a while back. So.
I did, actually. These questions that you work on, are these solved questions that you have algorithms for, or are these actually open research problems right now?
Yeah, it's really... They're all basically NP hard traveling salesman kinds of problems. So in one sense, there are resources you can go to see approaches that people have used, but we've done our own variants on them. It's hard to come up with a completely unsolved problem, but they are very difficult polynomial time optimizations typically. So they're solved in an operational sense, but for our test suite, our particular version, there's no optimal code yet. Let's see, did I want to say everything I wanted to say there? Right, whoever's in this corner is the winner, the overall winner. But obviously all these people have been leading at different times.
You said that Stein had won, but David Jones is the one that...
So he was saying, I said Stein won, and in this version, David Jones won. So something that I didn't say is that we've run about 16 of these contests.
Oh, I see.
And I'm going to be flashing images from different contests. So you will not be seeing one consistent contest data set presented. So sorry about that if it looks a little inconsistent at times. This next picture after this I'm setting up here is a really nice visual illustration of what I'm talking about, how algorithms advance. I'm showing you this so you'll be able to interpret what you see on the next screen. Here's our friend, the mastermind game. Here are the colored pegs that represent... Sorry?
This is my good.
Oh. Tell me if the screensaver turns on or something. The computer had a question. So these are the colored guesses that I'm making. This is the computer algorithm making a bunch of guesses and getting scored over here, and eventually it gets the right answer, and the computer won that particular round. So here is the combination of that visualization and the visualization I was just showing you on the previous slide, okay? These blue dots represent entries in the contest. Lower is better. Red represents the leading frontier. And what you're seeing is the guesses and scores made by the algorithm at different times in the contest. So the first entry is just totally random. It's noise. Then we say, well, at least we can guess all the colors here first. We can do at least that well. And then without getting into the algorithmic changes over time, what you can see is truly this algorithm gets remarkably good and remarkably efficient at solving, playing the game of Mastermind. So I like how that you're seeing as that those pictures advance, really smart people from all over the world making the best possible mastermind playing algorithm for that test suite. punctuate the zigzag of innovation is the name that I give for the next slide you're going to see. When I say that the score lower is better, I need to tell you exactly what the score is. The score is a combination of two things. We're looking at the cost function, which is to say the distance that the traveling salesman would travel. Lower is better there. And we're combining that with the CPU time. We just have some constants to combine those. So there's just some arbitrariness in there. But CPU time lower is better too. So the contest is essentially about trading off CPU time versus the efficiency of your algorithm, or the time intensiveness of your algorithm. So now this is the leading frontier, the red line. This is the first entry. This is the best entry. The score gets better and better as you go this way. Low cost function, low CPU time. And what you're seeing then is a leap in the improvement of the algorithm, which tends to use up, makes the cost function better, but uses up more time. And then you see people pile on and squeeze the slack out of that algorithm. This is what we call tweaking battles. There are a lot of dots on this line moving to the west. And then you'll see a big change here. And then that essentially is, you know, this, they're sort of up against a wall here. Nobody has any more ideas. And then somebody will stick a new idea in. By inserting that idea in, suddenly there's some breathing room. People descend on it and start pulling all the slack out. So you think about hyenas, you know, going after a carcass. People, really, swarms of people come in to optimize that algorithm.
And this is the point about collaborative innovation, right, is that what you want are many people, many eyes looking at the problem, right? One guy comes up, or gal comes up with a breakthrough idea, but there's probably a lot of headroom in there to improve upon it. But by having all these people working together and just attacking, you can get sort of other perspectives in it, and people making improvements that are sort of more specific to MATLAB, but still help everybody else.
Right, and furthermore, building a framework that an environment where both kinds of people have fun, because they're both adding value, and you want to support both the people who make leaps and the people who make tweaks.
If you had to actually value those contributions,
to give more than a T-shirt. How would you value the tweakers against the...
Value the tweakers against the leapers? That is the question. And I refuse... I mean, I don't touch that with a 10-foot pole in the actual contest. We just want to reward people who are making the code better. But that is a really tough question. And I would say the closer you get to it, the more you inspect it. And we've really crawled through this data with a fine-tooth comb. The harder it is to say who's really making the important contributions.
Yeah, right.
Handing out T-shirts and hats until they get converge on the right answer.
Goal is to get a matching set.
Yeah.
So I want to give you a little more insight into what's happening to the code here. So what you're seeing here is number of lines of code here. This is an area plot. So this is 50 lines of code. Not a very long program. By the end of the contest over here, these are all the leading entries, not all of the entries, but only entries that made the contest better, made the result better. By the end of the contest, the leading entry had 170 lines in it. Each color corresponds to contributions from a single author. So what you're seeing is major contributions from light blue and royal blue here, and those are eventually mostly eclipsed by this sort of lime green person here. And so you see big jumps and discontinuities as people are adding code. It gets removed by other players. This person made a big contribution, but it was eventually subtracted. So you're seeing the churn. We're not talking about one or two people vying for the lead. We're seeing many, many people making many, many kinds of contributions.
You'll see the analysis that on average the winning entry has close to 30, code from 30 other people.
Let's run the animation here. You want to do that? While Kareem brings that up, I'm going to describe what you're going to see. You're going to see each line in this animation. Each horizontal line is, think of it as a line of code. The color of the line, you can go ahead and start it because it runs for a minute. The color of the line is the color of the key for that author, right? And so it's as if you were looking at a giant computer screen and you backed up and you kind of squinted. This is actually what the code looks like. And the red hashes that appear over here in the left margin are telling you where new code is being injected. And so you're watching again, these are all the leaders. So in every case, these are making improvements to the algorithm. And then you just get a feel for the way in which many people contribute.
Is it normal for the leading for the leading entry to be, have some sort of shared for the entire duration of the contest. So this is assuming that there's one thing that no one comes through halfway through and says, ah, here is a sort of de novo thing that is in fact better. Is this the normal?
So the question is, is it normal to see stuff persisting this much? The answer is yes. We never see somebody throw all the code away.
Okay.
Halfway through the contest, and suddenly it's all in there.
Okay.
It's really, really difficult to come and just completely out of your head and make an improvement.
Right. There were a couple points in there that I noticed where there were significant changes. About 2/3 of the way through, the yellow came in, for example. That was pretty.
Right, and this also gives you a sense of how people are threading together their changes. So, yeah, and you see the code get dramatically longer. Most of the changes are very small. You know, there it got dramatically longer. That was a big improvement. Somebody went and stuck in a lot of code there. And then this is when people are doing those tweak battles, going back and forth over. I should stop.
Is there ever any collaboration around gaming the system, where people say, I've noticed that if we do this, and I think it's optimizing that way, I think the processor prefers this or that. I've noticed that too, so why don't we, and they end up gaming the system together?
We see people work together in all kinds of ways. We routinely have hackers who are trying to figure out our grading algorithm, how that works. They will... And then we have what we call test suite sniffers, and they will send in entries that aren't designed to do well in themselves, but they're designed to elicit information about the test suite. So they can essentially say, aha, I know the test suite number 16 is exactly this, so if it's 16, I'll just... And that's brittly writing to the test. But yes, we do see people collaborating on all those...
Is it active chat as well, right?
Yeah, we have news board, a forum, discussion forum going on parallel to this, and people are using that, and they're also talking by private emails. Some collaborations are done face-to-face.
What percentage of these people that are active know each other that you know of at this point?
We have developed over the years a community of people that know each other from this activity, and I would say almost none of them knew each other before this activity mm-hmm. happened. Mm-hmm. So like any collaborative activity, they've gotten to know each other. And I need to zoom forward here. This, you were talking about the different groupings, and can we track who's related to whom? This is one way to visualize this. This is what we call clans. If I look at the who's borrowing code from whom, sometimes we can color those entries according to sort of the family tree, the feedstock for that entry. So what you see here is, you know, this green region, for example, is one family, and then a new idea was introduced with this yellow code. And now this is a fascinating one. This orange code here started out back here. So in other words, it wasn't a real contender initially, but somebody really believed in it, and they nosed it forward. And then once it gets into the lead, everybody says, ah, this is the winning idea. Right? So it's like any marketplace of ideas. You see new ideas, you're not sure where to put your bets, what's gonna come to the fore. But after the fact, we can go pull this all apart and learn some interesting things. Here's a nice little story, just a little vignette I can tell very quickly. Again, this is the leading frontier here. We've zoomed into one small section. And I just wanted to tell you that in this particular contest, there was a function called convolution that was particularly useful at this point in the contest. Entries that made use of convolution are colored purple. Entries that did not make use of convolution are colored green here. What you see here, and then the size of the dot indicates how big the code is. Okay. So what you see is somebody introduced this idea of convolution, somebody named McGill, who was then never heard from again. But they came up with this idea, and they sort of didn't have the vehicle around it to make it really robust and perform with the top dogs here. But this person, Carlos Colon, noticed this. And I went back and pulled this all apart, and this indeed is the story. He noticed this, grabbed that, and he said, that's a good idea. And he went and took that code and sort of nudged it into first place. 1, 2, 3, 4. Boom, he's in the lead. Now everybody says, convolution, of course, what a great idea. That's why, give me some of that convolution. And thereafter, every single entry uses convolution. So it's, you can, you know, we sort of respond to that. You know this happens, but I've got the data to show that, which is fun.
McGill needs a baseball cap.
I know, poor McGill, right?
What you're saying is exactly right. We do try to go back after the fact, and we try to pass out T-shirts and stuff and give people lots of praise all along the way, and it's not all just about who's in the lead.
Did the test suite want convolution all along as a function?
Nobody had any clue that convolution was going to help. That's not programmed into it in any way. It happens to make for a good algorithm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes?
I'm wondering, from a more sort of commercial perspective, what happens when you start applying this to a situation where the first years you're there, McGill might have, patented his idea there, or, put some sort of legal hedge around that. Like, what is your opinion, or what is your experience showing you that might do to, how that would move forward when you're applying it to something outside
like
of this
airplanes.
Idea of test?
So this would be the Wright brothers. Wright brothers
exactly,
came in,
that's what I thought.
Right?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, great idea, we got to patent it, you can't use it, or it's an extraordinary expensive license, then you're dead in the water, right? And that's why we're sort of pushing the agenda to say that this setup is made to push collaboration. But if at any one moment somebody said, oh, I'm not going to share, right? I'm walking away with this, and prevent you from using it, you're hosed, basically. And what's interesting is that this is outside, right, the firm. But we see in the firm, like inside of a company, in fact, this happens as well, where there isn't that much sharing, and in fact, people are highly proprietary of their own code. Right? And so they don't have IP regimes, they just have secrecy, obfuscation. So you'll never see people share like this inside of a company either. This level of transparency and working together doesn't happen.
Have you ever noticed somebody submitting code that they didn't have the rights in those concepts?
To which they didn't have the rights?
Right, like let's say you work at some company that has some proprietary code and you grab some portion of it, part that says that it's copyrighted and throw it
right.
in the mail. I mean, I'm not even sure.
To my knowledge, that has never been an issue. I've never run across that. And I hope not to, but.
How did you figure out that McGill was the same as Cologne? Like, did you go over the code of every single vendor?
Yeah, you
they
can
will
go.
Show you.
You can go and look at the, and inspect the line, and you can see these same few lines were copied directly over here. And I was so interested in this entry, I went and did that.
Yeah, but it requires humans to do that kind of analysis, right? You didn't do it.
No, having recognized that this is an interesting thing to do, I've since built up textual analysis tools to help pick apart that.
And our analysis that we'll see is actually based on our ability to track when did the line of code first show up and by whom.
So we spotted these kinds of pictures in the wild, and we said, something really interesting is going on here. We need to make some tools and some do a better quantitative analysis of this.
Have you talked about doing that tool and that exposure during the process itself? I know one of the criticisms of online collaboration is this, we tend to err on the side of sharing common knowledge rather than sharing localized knowledge, which could benefit towards the end problem.
So we're constantly running those same visualizations during the contest, and we make it as easy as possible for people to see the diffs between the various.
But you didn't point out McGill for people because you didn't know.
Because we didn't know, but I, the point you're making is a tool that I want to build. I want to make those flags go up. I want to make it possible for somebody to say, this is what all the front runners are doing, but where are the cool ideas here that are going to give me a head in the marketplace? Right.
Right now, the only way you get visibility is by getting in the first place.
Right.
But there's ways for him to sort of say, cool ideas. We don't know how to get them in the first place yet. That would drive interesting attention.
Is there some sort of repository so that during the contest, anyone can grab all of the code and do their own?
Absolutely. It's all there. It's all in a database. It's all accessible through web forms. So yeah. And what I'd love to do is to have give McGill a way to say, I think convolution is the coolest thing. Somebody help me here because I don't know enough MATLAB to make it work here. This kind of gets at the question that was being asked earlier. What happens when you're, why are there so many, if this person is in the lead, why are there so many bad entries up here? One of the things that you see is tweak bombs, what we call tweak bombs. Tweak bomb means take the entry that's in the lead and go sniffing around for magic numbers. So n is equal to 5. What happens if n is equal to 6, 7, 8, 9, 4, and 3? And maybe one of those will do better. It's not very clever, but it's sort of that's how water seeks its level. So if you zoom in on that region that I was just looking at here, this is what a tweak bomb looks like. This is the lead entry. These are all changes to it. New lead entry, changes to it. Fly off like sparks. I just wanted to mention also that there are social signals that get sent through the naming of these entries. So these are real people. They're interacting with each other in real time. And they can, by giving clever names or significant names to their entries as they submit them, they having a conversation with each other and with the group. And so this is from a period of time when people were obfuscating their code, or there was obfuscated code in the lead, and so people were saying, oh, this is scrambled eggs. Well, it's not scrambled eggs, it's rotten eggs. Well, I didn't start, it's not my fault that it's obfuscated. Don't blame me, this is the code I inherited. Don't get obfuscated, follow the light. You call this collaboration, give me a break. That's the name of an entry. So people are trying to send social signals through this. You see things also like this, you know, tweak, 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 tweak fest, tweak-o-rama. Seems like everyone's just tweaking and so on. So people, if they feel bad about tweaking, they can give their entry a name that suggests a hint of an apology, but they still can't stop themselves from doing it. Here's one that I like. I wish I knew how this works. He's participating.
Maybe some people stop themselves from doing it.
True. I'm getting near the end of my pretty pictures here. So this is a visualization. This visualization depends on this little sub-diagram, so let me explain it. This is one entry, and this is, say, an entry that was submitted 5 minutes later, okay? Both of them are in the lead, and this is just illustrating that of all those lines, if I compared all the lines in these two entries, these were deleted, these were conserved, and these were added, okay? So if you see a big jump, that means there's not much shared code. If you see a small over or big overlap, that means a lot of conservation going on. These are all the leaders in a contest, and what you see is a period of rapid change in innovation, essentially here, leaps, and then this is what a tweak pattern looks like. The code is getting longer, and there's a lot more overlap. So it's, you can see something important happen where the red line, where the red arrow is indicated. I call it a phase transition, but it really is like the code is malleable, it's changing rapidly, and whoop, it locks down and starts to change much more slowly. What happened there? There's something interesting that's telling us. I finish here with a few thoughts on just motivation. This sort of speaks to what I do as a game designer. I need to get, in order to get people to come play the contest, I need to get them to actually come to my website and try this out. I need to give them the opportunity for personal glory. But the thing that really interests me is to create value in this common space and get them to collaborate. So how do you trade these two things against each other? Not all coders are jealous, of course, but I just want to reflect on what a jealous coder could do if they wanted to play the contest and make it hard for people to scoop their code and steal their ideas. One thing you could do is just enter at the last minute. You're really smart, you've got the best entry, and you zoom in at the last minute. Turns out that's really, really, really hard to do. You can do other things. You can obfuscate your code so you know it, what's going on in the code, but you make it really impossibly difficult and possibly hard for other people to do. Write spaghetti code, don't put any comments in, sandbagging, sock puppeting, other ideas for hiding your good ideas. But it turns out that the code that does really well doesn't look like that. And so I put the word behavior in quotes, but I want you to imagine what the contest looks like from the code's point of view. Code that is successful has the following attributes. It tends to have high rank, it stays on top for a long time, and it actually does tend to have more clarity. It does have comments. And of course, novelty is important for it when it gets its start. So I just wanted to reflect on the fact that the tension here is not actually between any two coders. That's not what's going on in this contest. Think about it from the code's point of view and the coder's point of view. You know, the coder, the jealous coder, wants to block the propagation of their ideas, IP regimes, lock it down. The code wants to propagate. So information wants to be free. The people who encode information don't always want it to be free, and therein lies the tension. These are not new ideas to you, but this is how these actually help me design the contest such that I can say I want to do some things that make it easy for the coder and some things that encourage the code. And so I want to make participation as easy as possible, and I want to reward vanity. But for the code's sake, I want to encourage copying and make it as easy as possible for people to follow the changes that are being introduced to the contest. And finally, I'll just say that...
What's a darkness period?
What's that?
What's a darkness period?
The darkness period is something that I didn't touch on here, and that is an early period in the contest for the first 24 hours where you actually can't see other people's code. So people said, you know, give me a little time to work in a dark room by myself. and then you can pull back the shades. And so we said, okay, we'll do that. So we add that. That makes the coders happy, but eventually we do turn on the lights so that everybody gets to see what's going on. Yeah?
Do you ever see malicious behavior other than just their code submission, like maybe a minute before the end of the contest, submit a slight tweak and then a DOS attack for the remaining minute?
We get essentially DOS attacks because people are just spamming with lots of entries. So we see that kind of behavior. And we generally think it's not that intentional, but that's one of the things we have to worry about. Yeah. I'll just close with this slide, and then I'm using up too much of Kareem's time here, so I need to sit down. But I find it useful to think about the relationship between the coder and the code itself, between the information and the information encoder. So here's a quote that I like. A chicken is only an egg's way of making another egg, and really a hacker is the only code's way of making more code. So we modify code, and good code, we can see through the contest entries that good code then modifies the behavior of the coders that come after us. So we modify our tools, and the tools modify us. We modify our code, and the code modifies us. So some pretty pictures, some philosophy, but I'll hand it back over to Kareem.
So what I want to, I'm going to have some time for conversation too. So I'm just going to show you this perception, right? The coder wants to block code propagation. That's the Wright brothers. Right, and this is like airplane design, right? This is the session tension. And what we want to see was within this open setting, what happens between people that want to be at the top and also the sort of the value of code living on and propagating in the future. So we did some analysis to show that. So I'll quickly run through them. Some statistics here and all that kind of stuff, but it'll be fairly easy. So what we sort of say, there's a in collaborative innovation, there's a so there's implicit tension between the collective and the individual, right? From the collective point of view, you want new knowledge available for all, right? And social welfare increases as other people build on top of that new knowledge. And so you would, from a collective point of view, care a lot about reuse of knowledge. Any bit of knowledge that gets reused a lot, that's good for the from the collective point of view. From the individual point of view, though, right, if you want fame and glory, you actually want to block other people from getting better than you, right? You want to be, I'm the final, I have the final word on this thing, nobody else can come after me. So you want other people's knowledge, but you may not want to share your own, because you'll lose sort of the ability to claim the first place. And so you want to sort of be at the top, but there's a tension between being at the top and letting other people succeed as well. So what we did, want to understand what explains sort of how often code gets reused in this setting. And I'm going to skip through all this H1, H2 stuff, and all this stuff, and also what explains top performance, and show you the data. So as Ned said, we can sort of track everything in this context. Right? So if you imagine an entry, right, which has four new lines of code, forward lines of code, and lines of code that the person had from before. In the future, we can look in and sort of say, entry J by someone else, two new lines of code, and then lines from I borrowed in. Okay, so we can track all the reuse of code that's been done inside of any one person at the line level. Okay, and in fact, we're going to try to go do it at the character level in the future. But at least the line level, we can track the origins of any one entry. And so if you think about the social value of a code, what we track is the number of times the new lines of code in an entry were used by other people. Okay, so how many, when you submit a code base, the new lines, how often were those used by other people in subsequent entries? And we have some independent variables, novelty, how new is that code, how much you borrowed from others, a complexity measure, and a rank measure of how good you were as a programmer in the past. And then a bunch of control variables in terms of age and frequency and so on. And what we find is the following. Oh, so let me just also show you the calculation method. So basically, if you look at this entry I, what you would sort of see is that percentage novelty is 4 divided by 15. Okay, that's how much new code there is. And then borrow from others is basically 9 lines of code borrowed from others. And that would be the way for us to calculate percentage borrowed code. And then social value of the entry I would be, we look at, okay, so how many times was this line of code, lines of code
from I were reused by other people. So you say, you know, twice here, line one, three times, two times, and two times, basically.
Yes.
Do you think it will be useful to show this information to the participants as they are entering their...
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
So now what we see basically is that there's, again, a power distribution, right? So, you know, some lines get used a lot, right, 112,000 times, and most lines don't, okay? So basically we sort of see this big distribution amongst them, right? And then...
You want to reward the line that gets 112,000 times?
I'm sorry?
Would you want to reward the person who created that line?
Yeah, great question, right? Great question.
Maybe, but it might just be the header line, right?
Or you might encourage somebody to just change a line, to tweak it so they would have a line that was in there for a long time.
Yeah, so the reputational value, and then there's monetary value. If you start to put money on it, it's very easy to game it, right? I'm copying you, but I'll make it so you can't really tell I'm copying you. So that's the trade-off we have to worry about.
If it were an English essay contest, you wouldn't want to reward
Right.
And you strip out a lot of the original sort of end and begin kind of statements,
right.
So that we don't capture that, we don't get that effect. What's interesting also is that basically, about in any one entry, there's only 3.5% new code. Okay, most of it is borrowed, about 70% of code, and then this is complexity measure, which I'm not going to get into right now. So this is, you know, sorry to show you statistics, but this is sort of the analysis of what happens when you look at reuse of code, right? And what we see basically is this effect works, that relative novelty initially helps you, okay? So it's a positive term, right, going up. So if you think of a linear term, it's just going up. As you increase the novelty, it gets reused a lot. But then there's a square term, and when you put a square term in the regression, what we see is that, in fact, it's like an inverse U relationship. So initially, new code helps, gets reused, but if it's too new, right, if the percentage is too new, then in fact, other people don't reuse it. It gets too complicated, people don't know what to do with it. And similarly, what we see is that if your code has borrowed a lot, right, in fact, if your entry has a lot of borrowed code, the new lines in that entry won't get used a lot until you reach sort of this bottom of this U shape, and then so that's where the square term comes in. And basically, I think I could actually draw it out here. You start with see what I'm showing. So basically, if you imagine this, and this is reuse, right, and this is novelty, right, what we see is this effect. Okay. And then when we look at reuse and borrowed code in your entry, what we see is this effect. Okay? There's a nice tension here between there's value in adding new stuff, right? And but after a while it gets too complicated, right? There's value in having there's not that much value in having borrowed stuff, but then if you board in the right way and you board a lot, it gets to be good. And then basically, you know, this sort of shows that, you know, your rank achieved helps you in the past. So if you achieve high rank, in fact, more people will borrow from you. And also, if you have more submits at the top, you can actually also helps you as well. And then let me show you. We'll skip that. This is sort of showing us the same results. Let me show you what happens to the top performance. Okay. And what we see here is that which entry becomes a leader. Basically, what we see is that the more you borrowed, the better off you are, okay? So the leaders, in fact, get kudos, are based on borrowing more, right? And also based on also novelty, but the effect is such that borrowing pays off more than the new code in this setting. And then, again, there's other things like basically if you have participated prior and you have a lot of submits at the top, you do well as well. But it's not based on just the sheer number of participation. You have to have had good submissions at the top.
Is that because of reputation, or is that because you're of practice?
So I think what this is that if you're just tweaking a lot and just doing a lot of tweak bombs, it's not going to help you.
Right? So it's not just frequency, in fact, it's the quality of your submissions that matter. So basically what we sort of see is that the social value of reuse has this tension that we sort of see. And being at the top, though, is sort of determined by both you borrowing lots and also adding new things, but it's more about borrowing lots than just adding new things. And so we were trying to basically make sense of, like, so what are the incentives for people to borrow but also come up with new things? And I think we have sort of a view that if you think about what's happening in the game is that there's a cognition problem. You look at a piece of code and you sort of say, hey, you know, can I even make sense of this, right? And if it's too new, you can't make sense of it, so it won't get reused a lot, right? And if it's initially looks similar to what people have done before, you won't use it at all, right? So there's a nice balance between somebody recognizing the code base, understanding it, and then reusing it along the way.
If you want to succeed, try something new, but not too new.
Yeah, I think that's it. So I'll stop here. I'm sure to show your picture. That has prettier pictures. And then we can just take a few questions. I'm sorry?
There were a bunch at the end after the
edit. Oh, yeah, there's a whole bunch of other ones as well. But let's have a discussion.
I'd be happy to show you this.
Yeah. My question, you used, I like the sort of thermodynamic model of sort of, as you described it, looking from the perspective of the code at how improvements show up and sort of phase changes over time. You said you've run about 16 of these. Have coders evolved? Could you sort of model the behavior of coders over time to see if they've learned what works and learned to apply those techniques that you've found to be most effective from the perspective of the code?
Yes, one of the things that we've seen is, as with any community of practice, people have gotten more sophisticated in how they game the contest, so people are collaborating in smaller teams more, they're getting more sophisticated at how they, sandbagging is something I refer to, and what that means is, you want to see if your code is going to do well, but you don't want everybody to be able to sniff the fact that it's good code, so you throw something else in there that's going to make it do poorly, so that then at the last instant you can pull the sandbag off and it speeds ahead. So we have seen people getting more sophisticated in the gaming of the contest, but I wouldn't say so much in terms of the usage of the MATLAB language itself. These people are already very skilled practitioners of that. They use MATLAB every day. I mean, I can tell you as somebody who does MATLAB programming for a living that these people are not slouches. They are the tops in the world. We are attracting really, really great people, and no single person on the planet could have written code that's as efficient as first place entry on the last day of the contest.
But so over time, you're saying that they tend to game better, but do they also then produce these sort of socially valuable outcomes?
So we haven't done a systematic analysis at the individual level to sort of see how does the trend of reuse for people's code change over time. That'd be something to look with a pool of people across contests and sort of see if they're actually producing code that gets reused a lot. But we have an endogeneity problem because, you know, it's like you're in the game to get the code reused anyway, so, you know, we have
to
sort of...
Right, you're kind of priming them really aggressively. But on the one hand, that's not such a big problem because it implies that you've designed the game correctly if you're producing the behaviors that are most productive from the sort of optimizing the code standpoint.
Yeah, anecdotally, it's nice to see people who are sort of acting as keepers of the community and say, well, that's not how we play this game. This is so, you know, don't worry so much about that, people stealing your code. It's fun, you'll try. And then they sort of, you know, help people participate.
Right.
So we see people doing it and coming back multiple times.
Has MathWorks tried to leverage any of these collaborative techniques?
Yeah, that's always the obvious question. No, we haven't. As the game designer...
You should come here so people can see you on the webcast.
Sorry. As the game designer, the whole point of this is to entertain our community, to bring people into the community and help them have a good time. And it's actually pretty hard to do something that's a real current problem in the art and is really entertaining to lots of people. We look for problems that have what we call a low ceiling and a low floor and a high ceiling, right? I can get in easy and understand the problem, but it's got enough headway for, and those tend not to be, you know, the real research problems.
But there is a company called TopCoder, TopCoder.com, that does this as a business model. So they'll, you know, work with various companies, take out problems in IT development, and run contests around that, basically in this way. But they don't have collaboration. They just have competition. So they'll get, you know, 300 people competing to write the shopping cart, and then they'll pay off, you know, $500 for it. But there's no, I've done some experiments with them to run some collaborative things, and we see a similar effect. But most of it right now is purely sort of competitive because they have all these IP concerns, right? Because what if some, here you get a t-shirt, right? There, if it's going to be used with infidelity, people may be worried about it.
But I spend a lot of time thinking about how to make that happen. So it's not that we're not thinking about that. Yeah.
So in that case, what does this say about collaborative innovation in the wild? You can tune it well enough so that you get these good results, and that's good. But if, as you're saying, it's kind of too difficult to model these sorts of model a problem in real time to return this sort of result. Then,
no, I think that's not the point that I was trying to make. I do think the analogy with Wikipedia is pretty strong. And so imagine if I put a really hard problem on a Wikipedia-like place, and I just left that open for years. My job is to make, for this, my job is to make a really entertaining contest that runs for a week that brings a lot of people. But there's no reason I couldn't have, you know, a range of these contests going on constantly that are much harder, that draw smaller numbers, maybe aren't so entertaining, but they become real feed points for certain kinds of communities. If you're really into this kind of algorithmic research, you would come here and chew on these kinds of problems. And
I guess I'm asking more generally about what the broader lessons, about innovation.
So I mean, I think people have been mystified about open source, right? And this is a nice way to sort of think about how open source may be working. That why is it that thousands of eyes are making the code better? And in fact, what we're probably seeing, I mean, in a very microcosm way, is that in fact it's this ability to reuse the code, the ability of many people to sort of build on top of each other's work. So it's incremental. So open source gets damned for being incrementalist, too many small changes. But we can sort of see over time what that results in. Right? And this is, I think, so coming in as an open source feature, so I came in going, wow, now I can actually test for performance in this setting. Right? I can test for and sort of break apart new knowledge versus old knowledge, and how does that all fit together?
So I just to pick up on that, I would say that my biggest takeaway is to make a framework that many people can contribute in, and people can see it's granular enough so that people can see the result of even a small contribution. And I think the analogy to biology is very strong here. When you think about genetic changes, you see vast, great variety, great potential, and yet it's still happening one tiny change at a time. And that's what we see here. Big changes in code. This is not the exact same code here and here. Big changes, but every single change is pretty incremental.
Well, first, you've had your hand up.
Okay. So, do you know of anyone using automated strategies on the outside? For example, like a genetic algorithm that's constantly spewing out entries, just using your rating as a fit in some?
Yes, that's happening. Yeah.
And do they sometimes do quite well?
They provide useful information to those contestants, and that's one of the spamming things we have to guard against. So we'll give you 10 tokens per hour or something like that. But so that is happening. People automatically generating code algorithmically. Attack the algorithm contest.
You're saying that it's a problem for you?
Or? It's on the verge of being a problem. We haven't adopted countermeasures yet, but we might.
Just because of the amount of resources?
We have a single, because of resource usage. We have a single queue, we have one machine, and everybody's got to feed in through that. So if you can swallow resources the same way a denial of service attack swallows resources.
To the extent this is an interesting strategy that might be nice to develop in more sophisticated ways,
so in the context of an interesting game and contest, it's not an interesting strategy if it causes people to not play. So a real DOS attack that shuts down the queue and people can't play, I don't want to do that. But that doesn't mean it might not be a useful tool for a parallel solution of some other...
Even a bot contest.
Right. I mean, it suggests other contests.
Right, and I guess I'm suggesting a semi-on contest or something where you have enough resources on the
and that's something else we want to look at. Yeah, we could just plug into Amazon Web Services and fire up more servers, maybe that would be another way to do it.
Yeah. Even if you don't throw problems out to the world in a contest environment like this, is there a way to adopt any of these ways to incentivize collaboration within an even your own software developer team or something like that? Is that something?
Yes. I mean, all of these, there are definitely lessons that I try to apply in a very conscious way to our work environment. And, you know, I was behind bringing just, you know, MediaWiki and doing an install locally at my company. And that does make a big difference. So having a framework that does not punish you, I think one of the big things I would observe is that there's all these sort of quiet coercion to use language like stealing, you know, when you're talking about borrowing an idea. Some people say, you know, theft, is that theft or not? And if you just get people used to the fact that it's not theft, it's not stealing, it happens a lot more and the group benefits. So my answer is yes.
Yeah, I'm wondering what implications, if any, the use of the MATLAB language in particular had upon, you know, your research and ultimately your discoveries about, you know, these trends in innovation. Are there particular components or structures to the MATLAB language that may or may not have affected, you know, your conclusions?
So that's a great question. And I do think that there's something, I don't want to make this point too strongly, but I do think there is something special about the MATLAB language in the sense that you can do, it's a compact interpreted algorithmic language. So it's good for attacking problems that are compact and algorithmic. I can make a one-line change, and it can be potent and meaningful and valuable. And that's harder to do in more verbose languages. So, you know, and we don't have a compile time step. We don't have lots of, so some people complain that the MATLAB language is too compact, but in this case, it happens to be a benefit. I can look at one page of code, and as an advanced practitioner, I can make a change. And so it does lend itself to this. The fact that we haven't been copied, even though the fact, you know, people like this contest and it hasn't been taken up by others, I don't know why. Some of that might have to do with the fact that it's just harder to do with another language. But so it's a good question.
Aside from the potential constraints, do you see a point where reach a place where the effectiveness of collaboration is actually diminished by having too many participants?
So an active area of research, which I'm sure many of you are aware of, is the degree to which communities are sharing and everybody's rushing along the same wavefront. So something that I would like to do with this is to break the contest up into smaller communities or, you know, rooms or bubbles and then let them recombine. So there is a certain pile-on effect that you see, which could, I simply don't have the data for that, but yeah. I could see how it would be really interesting to try to break people into smaller groups and recombine. So maybe that's another area that I want to do research in.
Or even the marginal use of each additional participant after a certain number is minuscule or
right.
Just not there.
In a related work, I'm looking at programming competitions, and it's all competition, and what happens as you add more competitors. So do you have incentives to innovate as the threshold of competitors increases? And what I'm finding is that depends on the problem type. So the more complex a problem, then you're better off adding more competitors because you have diverse knowledge sources and somebody comes up with a nice trick. But we haven't looked at it from a collaborative standpoint. Like adding the 101 person, does that hurt or help the group? We haven't done that yet. Yeah. That's a great question.
Kareem does have a great paper on that. Look for that coming soon.
I wonder also about the what your control in this experiment is. In other words, have you thought about allowing private entries? So all you say is that, yes, the algorithm improves over time, but you have no, that just proves that it's gotten faster over time. You don't know if you know, Tom had been able to just develop his own algorithm over time.
So this isn't quite what you're asking, but let me tell you something that is a form of control. When we introduce this darkness period, this contest doesn't happen to show up. But imagine up until this point, nobody could look at each other's code. So we have essentially 2 days in which people can submit entries to the contest, and yet nobody can see what their code is. And so people submit code, and they kind of stop improving at some point. And then the instant we let people see each other's code, it immediately improves rapidly.
They still get feedback on their own code.
What's that?
They still get feedback on their own code.
Yeah, they're getting feedback on their own code, so they know what their score is. So it's not exactly the control that you're looking for, but it is a strong hint in the direction that collaboration is always, you know, you've got a bunch of smart people working together. It's going to be better than just those individuals. There's certainly more we could do there, but I feel like that's a good indication.
I just want to be mindful of the time, since, you know,
think we've over our time limit, so we'll stop here. We'll stick around for more questions, but we'll stop.
Yeah, I'm happy to stay as long as anybody wants to stay.
Thanks a lot.